He comes up and says, what about that phone? Then he always, if I'm slow, he kind of opens his jacket a little, just let me see me his business.
We're going to hold off on voting on the consent agenda till Sam gets here. He's supposed to be here by 11. Supposed to be at 11. If everything else looks like we can do it with 2. Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Portland City Council. Before we begin the official proceedings, it's a question I ask each council day of the community. And the question is, how are the children? And the reason I ask that question is I know that when our children are cared for, our community as well. And we invite experts in to talk to us each week. And today we have Esme Shorenstein. And Esme is a third grader at the Creative Science School at Bridger Elementary. So Esme, would you like to come up? Do you want one of your parents to come with you? Good. The Creative Science School is a focus option program within the Portland Public Schools for children grades K through 7. Students are encouraged to be independent thinkers, learners, and problem solvers. Students develop and demonstrate the ability to create questions, formulate solutions, and apply results throughout their lives. So Esme, welcome to City Council, and thank you for being here. What would you like us to know? And could you speak into the microphone?
Good morning, Mayor Potter and City Commissioners. My name is Esme Shorenstein, and I live on Southeast 48th Avenue. Most of our neighbors are really nice. I like being able to walk to many coffee shops, toy stores, and just cool shops on Hawthorne and Mount Tabor Park. I go to the Creative Science School currently located in the Bridger Building. Next year, my school is moving to the Clark Building because we share a building with the Bridger Neighborhood School, and it's getting a bit crowded. I like our teachers and the projects we do, and I think they're very creative. I think Portland should put more money into schools. For example, science equipment is needed for the 6th and 7th graders. Also, we should have better kitchens to cook healthier and tastier food for the students. Finally, we should have better lighting in the school, and especially in the bathrooms, so that the younger kids don't get scared. One thing that bothers me is that there's too much trash, like old paper, old foods, styrofoam, etc. in the city. These materials kill animals like birds, mice, and could be harmful to dogs and cats too. I also think that there's too much graffiti, and those who get caught doing this should get more severe punishments, like being made to clean graffiti every weekend for a year. Homelessness is also a problem. I think Portland should make more homeless shelters for homeless people because it's not fair that some people have a home and others do not. Also, Portland should make more schools. Also, Portland should make more schools for homeless kids because it will help them get educated and their parents not to worry when their children get older. To celebrate Earth Day, Portland should plant more trees, flowers, and all sorts of plants, because the earth is getting a bit polluted, and this will help get the pollution out of the air. And I think there should be bigger water gardens and just gardens at school. I really thank you all for listening to me and making the city a better place.
Well, thank you very much, Esme. We appreciate you coming in today. Can we give this young lady a hand? City Council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams. Leonard.
Here.
Seltzman.
Here.
Potter.
Here. I would like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which lobbying entity they are authorized to represent. Please read the first communication.
Item 477, request of Kayola Morley to address Council regarding the need for speed zones around Portland skateboard parks.
I
Thank you for being here. When you speak, would you please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Get my seat in. My name is Kayola Morley. My name is Kayola Morley, and I am the chair of Friends of Pier Park. And I'm here to discuss the importance of placing speed zones around skate parks. Pier Park, I believe, was the first park to get a skateboard park built within the park system. And since its operation, I believe about 2-3 years ago, we have learned quite a bit about, well, the traffic that comes along with building a new skateboard park. What makes Pier Park unique is, in a sense, is that it's connected. The entrance to the skateboard park is North Bruce Street, and it's also the same street used by the disc golfers community to get to what we call the circle, which is a little parking lot. And so any given day, there's about 100-plus disc golfers coming to the park using the same street that skateboarders use to, well, basically glide in to the skate park. And there's been numerous incidents where we've had a lot of close calls with kids coming from the cross street, which is Hudson, to get onto Bruce to cross over to the skateboard park. And with just cars speeding by and kids not really paying attention to their surroundings, it's for the community has found that very disturbing, and we're trying to get things done. We've spoken to PDOT, and we've got information. We're on the waiting list for that for a survey to be done. In the previous survey that they've done on North Bruce Street, there's always been cars going over the speed limit. Mostly the cars were going between 30 and 35 miles per hour. So we're working with the neighboring houses near the skateboard park to see what the best plan would be, either to put speed bumps or other options that we're looking at. And what my concern is that skateboard parks are becoming very popular. And what I'd like to see done is to put speed zones just for the safety of the kids around, knowing that what Pier Park has dealt with over the years. And thank you for listening today.
Can I follow up a little bit? Do you know what the current speed is there?
The current speed on North Bruce Street would be 25.
And so on Bruce Street's the one that you've identified would be benefited most by the speed bumps?
Yes.
Okay. I will follow up on it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is that the...
That's all the communications.
Okay. We'll go to the consent agenda. Commissioner Leonard, did you have some items to pull from the consent agenda?
We have to wait till Commissioner Adams gets here, if you want to hold off.
Okay. If we maybe could wait for the consent agenda until he got here.
Okay.
Have to.
We'll move to the 9:30 time certain. Please read item 478.
Accept the Urban Forestry Commission 2007 annual report.
I think that this one and the next one are going to be read together.
Yeah, I was going to ask Carla if you could read 507.
507. Designate 2 heritage trees in the city.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor, and members of the council. Just over a year ago, City Council passed the Urban Forest Reaction Plan to direct citywide activities that would meet 3 major goals of our urban forest management plan. These are, 1, growing and enhancing the urban forest. 2, continuing to secure the public support for the urban forest. And 3, ensuring the urban forest serves all of Portland's residents. This annual report includes a brief summary of current and upcoming projects, obstacles to effective implementation, and some recommendations for resolving those obstacles. I do want to take a moment to thank our Urban Forestry Commission. You're doing a great job. This 11-member volunteer body continues to do amazing work for the benefit of Portland's trees. And it's also great today that we will be adding 2 more heritage trees to our roster of heritage trees. This is always one of my favorite city council activities, is adding heritage trees. Michael McCloskey, chair of the Heritage Tree Committee, will introduce us to our newest heritage trees. Urban Forestry Commission Ed Washington will start us off. But first, Ed, this will be your final time before the city as chair of the Urban Forestry Commission. He'll be leaving this upcoming June. I just want to speak for all of the council when I say thank you. We deeply appreciate your 7 years of service to the Urban Forestry Commission. And let us not forget your previous record as an outstanding Metro Councilor for the 5th District. So thank you, Ed. He has worked not only on the Forestry Commission, but in Metro, he has worked to include expanding open spaces through the creation of Whitaker Ponds, improvements to Smith and Bybee Lakes, Forest Park expansion, and so many other accomplishments that have created a true legacy for our community. So thanks. And now, to top that off, with your work at enhancing Portland's urban forestry is truly commendable, Ed. Your shoes will be impossible to fill in the commission. And the proactive attitude and the passion that you have brought to serving on the commission is no small way a thanks to you and one reason why this commission is now an outstanding group of citizens who are not shy. So that's great. So with that, Chair Washington, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman. I'd like to extend a welcome to all of you, Mayor Potter, Commissioner Leonard, and again, Commissioner Saltzman. Thank you very much for those very kind remarks. We always say that they really weren't necessary, but, you know, deep in our hearts, we really appreciate it. So thank you very, very much. I'd also like to acknowledge one of our members who is in attendance but who will not be presenting today, Commissioner Diana Shervey. She's here somewhere. There she is. And I don't think there's anyone else. And also, I'm going to, it's a pleasure for me to introduce to you one of our, we have all of the commissioners outstanding. This is one of our very outstanding commissioners, Commissioner Mike McCloskey. He's the chair of the Heritage Tree Committee. Mr. McCloskey comes to the commission, brings to the commission a tremendous past experience. For 30 years, he was the chairman and CEO of the National Sierra Club. So it's a pleasure having him here, and he's just done a great job on the Heritage Tree Commission, as well as those who were chairing that commission, that committee before he arrived. So I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Mike McCloskey for his presentation.
Thank you, Ed, and it's an honor to be before you again with some positive recommendations for additions to the Heritage Tree System. This time, we have two trees to recommend. They both have the approval of the consent of the landowner involved. One of them is, let's see which comes up first, an Oregon white oak. I have, incidentally, a write-up here. Maybe I have to have this distributed to you. Yes. Suddenly, I don't have any light here.
We'll get you more light. We'll get you some more light.
My elderly eyes don't work well in the dark. No, we're all, well.
Coming.
There we go.
Yes. Thank you. This oak is North Portland, 4768 North Oberlin. It's a fine example of its species. Its canopy size compares very well to ones we already have in the system, though we have a number of Oregon white oaks already in the system, but our reading of the code doesn't suggest any limitation on the number of such trees as long as they're large and impressive, and this one is, and such impressive trees constitute part of our ecological heritage and provide lots of ecological services to us. And this one, while it's in the backyard of the house involved, it's quite visible from the street and back of the house on North DePaul Street, and our commission has recommended that you approve adding this to the system. I don't know whether you're able to see our slides, but anyway, you have them up there.
Yeah.
If you'd like to ask questions about this one before I move on to the next one, or would you prefer to me do the next one?
I was curious about the ages. Can you determine the age on these two trees?
We don't have data on the age. I think you'd have to take a boring to actually count it. You know, there are tree rings, but the size varies with the growing conditions of whether it grows fast or slowly. But we're right in the heart of the range for these trees here in Portland, so we get some of the best ones. In fact, one block from my house in Southwest Hills is the Oregon white oak that has the record canopy spread in the world. So we have a special value to treasure with these trees here by virtue of where we're located and where they like to grow.
Thank you.
And these old trees provide an extra, as I said, extra measure of ecological services to us. The Ponderosa pine is in northeast Portland at 3437 Northeast 29th at Fremont. And while this tree is most common in eastern Oregon, and there are a few in western Oregon, it's not that common in well-watered areas such as this. And it's also compares very favorably to the three ponderosa pines we already have in the system. And it's 4.5 feet in diameter. It's in the front yard of the house, but it's very close to the sidewalk and easy to see and easy for visitors, neighborhood visitors to appreciate. And there aren't that many impressive ponderosa pines in the northeastern Portland. So we recommend that it be added to, and I already have a picture of it. And that's my presentation.
Okay, thanks. We'll actually vote to include them after the presentation here when we vote to accept the report as well.
Thank you, Mayor Potter and commissioners. The Urban Forestry Commission is a very, very hardworking group of individuals, and we really appreciate the work that you're doing for us now because they work really hard for the city. And thank you very much, Mike, for your presentation. The Urban Forestry Commission is mandated by the Urban Forestry Management Plan to really carry out six primary duties, and I would like to touch on them just very briefly. First is to provide assistance in the development of the Urban Forestry Management Plan. Second, to provide assistance in the development of the annual urban forest budget request. And third, review plans and policies around city codes that relate to urban forestry, and to prepare and submit to the Commissioner of Parks and Recreation an annual report, which we're doing today. And this is our management plan, or your management plan. And this is the Urban Forest Action Plan, which we work from. And this is the annual report, which you all are getting today. And then last, we work from the Portland Urban Canopy. And one of the things that we do in addition is we serve as an appeal board for citizens with tree issues, and we also support the Urban Forestry Public Outreach and Education effort. And I think if you look at the members of this commission, and you're going to hear from some of them in the second half, all of the things that we really talk about and all the things that these reports really touch on, we have tried to bring those into the work that we're doing, the education outreach, and we have a very active person who really deals with budget. We have people that really deal from inter-bureau relationships. So I think you'll find and you'll see that what you've asked us to do through all these reports, this commission is doing it. I would also like to just show you four slides, and if we could lower the lights, And I think slide number one pretty much speaks for itself. It's showing the canopy in the city of Portland. I think if you look at the green, of course, Forest Park really dominates, and that's a reason why. We still have a lot of work to do within the city. And I think one of the important things there for us is that, you know, we must continue, and with your urging and your pushing and your help, is that we want to make sure that we put the right tree in the right place. If we're going to make that whole area as green as Forest Park, which may be an impossibility, but I think it should be our goal. The second, one of the things that we really work on is slide number two, please. Now, this is a slide of Denver Avenue. The top slide is Denver Avenue before trees were planted, and the second slide is Denver Avenue after trees were planted. So I think you can see it's a great demonstration of the kind of work that the commission does and really what we expect of in the city of Portland. That's a great example of the before and after. The before part reminds me a little bit of how Denver Avenue, not quite like it was when we left Vanport in the flood in 1948 and went up there. There were very few trees, and it's a pleasure to see that area the way it is today. And lastly, the reason for this is right there, and that's what this is all about. Most of us, most of them will not be around 300 or 400 years, but those trees that we plant will be. But it's for them, and it's for their kids, and their kids to follow. And to that end, I'd like to say that it's so very important as we look at trees that we really don't forget about the native trees that we have, those trees that really last a long time. And it's nice to have the small, beautiful, decorative trees, but they don't last a very long time. But this is what it's all about. And so I would just like to close my part saying, again, thank you all so very much for the hard work you do for us, and also to thank all the commission members for the hard work that they do for you in the city and all the people in this region. So I'm going to call up three other commissioners, and they're going to introduce themselves. I would not dare introduce them. Well, I could, but I'm going to let them introduce themselves because they're very capable. But thank you very much, and again, thank you for the kind remarks.
Thank you, Ed. Good morning, Mayor Potter, Commissioner Leonard, Commissioner Saltzman. My name is Margot Barnett, and my professional background is in environmental public health and public involvement. As Chair Washington indicated, the commission is responsible for hearing appeals related to the tree cutting ordinance, developing the urban forestry management plan, and advising the urban forester and the city council on progress and obstacles encountered in the inter-bureau work that impacts the forest resources of the city. As the city proceeds to integrate the management of the gray and green infrastructure, the role of the commission has become critical for ensuring that there is a balance and a place for trees as we continue to urbanize, redevelop, and increase density. We make sure that the city doesn't lose sight of the forest while concentrating on green streets, multimodal transportation, design areas, infill, and all of the other elements that make up the evolving form of Portland. This includes resolving challenges such as the preservation of views and solar access. The theme of right tree in the right place is the only way that we can ensure that we maintain a forest that provides canopy and ecosystem functions rather than an endless rotation of planting and removing small trees that never get a chance to reach maturity and fulfill their function. This annual report provides an update on the city's progress on the Urban Forestry Action Plan that was accepted last March, a review of some of the commission activities, and a discussion of some of the obstacles to achieving the goals for the city's urban forest. The commission has several ongoing committees in addition to the Heritage Tree Committee that are actively addressing tasks identified in the action plan. These include committees involved in regulatory review, education and outreach, and budgeting. I chair the Rules and Regulations Committee and the Budget Committee for the Commission. This committee work has included providing detailed input to city bureaus working on the citywide tree policy review and regulatory improvement project. To set this stage for presentations by my fellow commissioners, I will quickly review the three goals of the action plan. One is to protect, preserve, restore, and enhance the urban forest. This includes increasing the urban canopy to meet goals, ensuring that the regulatory program to protect trees is clear, equitable, enforced, and provides clear mechanisms to preserve and enhance the forest during development and redevelopment. Two is to develop and maintain support for the urban forest, and that stewardship of the urban forest must be shared among residents, governmental agencies, businesses, and non-governmental agencies. To achieve that end, education of citizens is vital to ensure that they understand the role of trees in environmental and human health, as well as their economic value. Stable support includes ensuring that economic resources are sufficient to maintain and enhance the urban forest. And the third goal is to manage the urban forest to maximize community benefits for all residents. It is critical that the benefits of trees are spread equitably across the city in terms of street tree distribution, parks, and green spaces. The urban forest contributes to livability for the whole community and contributes to watershed health. In summary, Portland's trees are a working, living forest that is publicly and privately owned. As such, it is critical we make sure that we have a healthy mix of young and old trees, as well as a balance of species that serve to provide shade, manage stormwater, and provide habitat. The urban forest is a vital asset of the city and must be maintained and renewed to continue its function. I'll turn the discussion over to Brian Krieg for a description of some of the Urban Forestry Commission's committee activities supporting the action plan.
Mayor Potter, members of the council, my name is Brian Krieg. My professional background is in social marketing and public-private partnership development, along with some government relations. Much of the work of the Forestry Commission is broken out into our committees. We have about 11 of them. One of the things that we need to remember is that 53% of the city's tree canopy is in private hands. And so actually in our committees, we often have people in who are citizens, stakeholder groups, other government agencies, and of course our city nature staff. Friends of Trees would be a great example of one of our stakeholder groups that's very active in working with us on different projects. Reports from each of the committees are in your packet of materials there, and I'm not going to go over them committee by committee, but I'd like to just highlight a couple things that are going on in the Education and Outreach Committee that I think are kind of exciting and really bode to the types of things we're trying to build for the future. One of the I think, most rewarding things that we've been working on over the last about year and a half has been trying to increase and do tree plantings at our local schools, working with Portland Parks, Portland Public Schools and the individual schools to enhance the environment there for our kids. Each of the tree plantings that we've done at the schools during this time has been rather different, but our goal that we're aiming at is kind of coming up with a model that we can actually start using at more of the schools. And I think the most recent plantings we had at Jefferson High School were a really good example of how we can do that and how we got the high school students actually involved with working with the little kids at the grade school nearby, and the kids actually planting a legacy there that will impact their lives, but the lives of many others after that. And I think by coming up with a bit of a model, then we're going to be able to do some things about looking for some outside and private funding to help us do more of those. I think that's going to be something that's going to just, we're going to be doing more and more of them over the coming years on that, and that's a goal. One of the other projects that we have going on is a revisioning of the Neighborhood Tree Liaison Program to kind of more bring it in line with the current needs of the community. That's a program that was started quite a few years ago in response to helping different neighborhood groups get more tree plantings going. One of the things that, of course, has happened over time is we have like over 90 neighborhoods in the city, and in some neighborhoods we have great tree programs that are going on. Eastmoreland would be a prime example of that. But we have neighborhoods that don't have tree committees And so we're needing to get them started. And so the needs of the different tree committees and those who are working on it have really been diversifying. So we're looking at retooling that program to provide a number of different types of materials and ideas and trying to do more of sharing. And so some of that is some needs assessment that's going on and review of materials. One component of that in particular is being done by a Portland State graduate student. She is taking the information from the tree canopy report, which we presented back to you back in February, and is breaking down the data neighborhood by neighborhood so that we can provide these tree committees with information. So if it's a committee that really isn't doing anything, they're going to have a baseline to start with. It'll give them data they can do planning off of, and also it'd be very helpful if they apply for grants from different organizations on that. That's a project that'll be done this summer, and it's going to be very, very useful out there. Sharing information between the different groups is something that we're going to want to foster also, and we're looking to see if there's some ways that we can incentivize having some of the established tree groups in neighborhoods helping out, reaching out to some of those who don't have their programs in place at this time so that we can have more of them across the entire city. As you saw in that one slide, there's a lot of areas in the city that still need tree coverage. And lastly, this committee also selects the annual Bill Nadeau Community Trees Award and works on the Arbor Day project. And I would like to note that this year's winner of the Nadeau Award, we actually had two winners. We had the ecology students from Jefferson High School for their outstanding project. And we also had the East Columbia Neighborhood Association for a children's arboretum that they established out on the slough that is quite a neat park that they put together. And the fact that they raised $130,000 out in the community to put to that project is something, and it really was an award-winning project. At this point, I'll turn it over to Christine.
Good morning. My name is Christine Karnezes. I'm an attorney who's worked in legal publishing for over 30 years, and as I move into retirement, I'm taking up flower farming on Savi Island. So the natural world has always been a passion of mine. Margo and I have worked with the Interbureau team to track the city's implementation of the Urban Forestry Action Plan. Besides commissioners, that team is comprised of dedicated city employees who daily work on the myriad complex issues and competing demands of having a green environment among the city's built infrastructure, and who've helped us identify obstacles to implementation of some of the action items in the Urban Forestry Action Plan. Excuse me. I want to talk to you about a few of the most pressing obstacles that the Commission has identified and wants your help in resolving to assure that we have a healthy urban forest and reach our goals of increasing canopy cover significantly so that it in turn can provide the many environmental, economic, social, and aesthetic benefits we know it does. The first of these is enforcement. Enforcement requires that we first have a base of clear, consistent ordinances. Please fund the second year of the tree code review process you have authorized to assure that we have this basis. We have requirements for planting trees, to assure that the right tree is planted in the right space, as well as requirements to assure that we not lose canopy to disease, neglect, or property owners who think they can damage this community resource or even remove it without permission or mitigation. You can also help these parts of the enforcement effort by providing staffing support in all relevant bureaus to assure consistent enforcement of all the tree codes, by enacting civil penalties for tree code violations, and by providing money and staff resources for increased public education. The second major area of obstacles concerns funding tree establishment and maintenance. The benefits of living among trees in our city, from better stormwater management to improved air quality and temperature control, depend on ensuring a healthy urban forest. Trees must grow before they provide these benefits, and growth, as we all know, takes time. And until trees reach a beneficial size, they are subjected to many competing demands in an urban environment. If you would fund the lifelong care and maintenance of trees in capital and other projects, you would assure a healthy urban forest into the future. The third major area of obstacles that we'd like your help in resolving concerns citizen education. We need more of it. We need to coordinate it among the various city bureaus and stakeholder groups so that the public hears a consistent message. We need to dispel the notion that trees are dirty. We need to teach the public about a tree's energy cycle so that they properly care for this community asset, that they don't lop off the growing tips of trees. We need to facilitate a greater awareness of the many benefits provided by living among a forest while also living in a city. This educational effort to increase support for stewardship of this community asset takes project funding and staffing, where you can help. Please do. Finally, the Commission would like to ask you to provide us administrative support. This would enhance our productivity, and it would prolong our ability to function effectively for the city as volunteers. Thank you.
As a concluding couple of remarks here, we celebrated Arbor Day last week at the Hoyt Arboretum. It was a very special place in this city, something that we're all very proud of. Mayor Potter joined us at that event, and he commented on the fact when he comes home, when he flies in from meetings in other cities, other states, and as he's coming in, he looks out the plane and he sees the green of the city and he sees the trees and the beauty that they have and how that made him feel good. And he knew he was at home and he was proud of the city. You know, I think that's a feeling that we can all share on that and have had that response. But Portland's tree canopy of today did not happen by accident. It required the vision, the leadership, and the care of our past civic leaders. If they hadn't made it a priority, we still might be referring to Portland as Stump Town. Our urban forest is a treasure, as health depends on public education and outreach, and continued funding and support of policies that will maintain and enhance it. It is essential that, along with adding new trees, that our mature tree canopy be maintained and cared for. Your Urban Forestry Commission is committed to this cause and appreciates the opportunity to present this report.
Thank you, folks.
Before you go, I just want you to know that we are working on that second year of the comprehensive tree code enforcement project. I can't say right here whether it's in the mayor's budget, but I'm hoping it is.
It is.
I think. Right. Okay.
Thank you.
And also that we are looking at trees as infrastructure now from a citywide perspective. When we calculate what our infrastructure is now, we do in fact now include trees as part of our infrastructure. And finally, we are looking to figure out more effective penalties for those who, wantonly want to disregard the rules and take down trees or clip trees or make a view that's on public space. So we are working more diligently on resources for that as well. So, thank you.
Thank you, folks. Thank you. I really enjoyed my time up at the Arboretum.
Yeah. Thank you for coming.
Thanks.
Three more magnolia trees in the park.
Yes.
Did we have a sign-up sheet for this?
We do. We have two people signed up, Scott Fogarty and Bragton West.
Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, please state your name for the record. We each have 3 minutes.
Great. I think I'm going to go first. My name is Bragton West, and I'm the program director with Friends of Trees. I just wanted to give you some guest report on what we've done this year. So we planted 1,360 trees in the city of Portland, which is a 7% growth over last year. So we're very excited about that. And I hate to comment on the rivalry that may exist with our neighbors to the north up in Vancouver, but they grew, our work there grew by 250% this year. So I hate to kind of lay down a challenge there. But I do see the potential for growth in Portland being significant. And I hope that you guys will rise to the challenge and help us get to a significant growth in the years to come. I also want to say that I'm proud of our species diversity. The Oregon white oak, which is the heritage tree you first saw, we planted 30 of those this year. That's a tree that's very hard to come by, but Friends of Trees is really good at getting species diversity in our canopy. And I guess I just wanted to thank the Urban Forestry Department, Bureau of Environmental Services, and invite you to join us at Hosford Middle School for our Earth Day celebration. We'll be planting 6 trees there on Earth Day. Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Scott Fogarty. I'm the Director of Friends of Trees. And I want to begin by saying that Friends of Trees truly appreciates the public-private partnership that has occurred between our organization and the City of Portland over the years. We work very closely, as Brighton said, with the Urban Forestry Division of City Nature, and without them, we wouldn't be able to do what we do. And to that end, we truly appreciate the efforts. We have been nationally recognized for this private-public partnership, and we hope that this continues to grow and strengthen in the future. You heard earlier three of the goals of the plan, and Brighton just mentioned the first one, growing and enhancing the forest, which we have taken great strides and pride in doing. But the second piece was the public support piece, and I'm proud to say we work with over 2,500 volunteers who give an average of 20,000 hours to the City of Portland and to Friends of Trees every year. We held 17 events in 48 of those 90 neighborhoods in Portland, so we are focusing on a lot of the neighborhoods that have the greatest need. When you looked at that first slide, you noticed the east side was particularly not green, a lot of white there. So we've worked with over 20 business partners, again, the Urban Forestry Division, Metro, many neighborhood associations, and other agencies within the city to accomplish this. And then the third bullet, or the third point, was that to serve all the residents, the urban forest to serve all the residents. And I like the fact that we're talking about building green infrastructure and growing the green infrastructure and including that in future funding for city projects, as well as educating the public about the true economic value that this green infrastructure provides to the city, other than the environmental benefits and the aesthetic benefits. I noticed while we're sitting there and they put the slides of the heritage trees up, it almost merged with the mural that's up there. It looked like one tree coming all the way up, and it's really, really tells the true story of Portland and our urban forest, which again is recognized nationally. And so to this end, I would just like to touch on one of our major projects that we have going on. It's called Greening the East Side. We are focused for the next 2 years on planting in the East Side in those neighborhoods that have the greatest canopy need, as well as neighborhoods that have below the median income household level. So we're actually trying to make trees affordable for those residents so we can increase the urban canopy there. As well, we have funding from the CBO project, from the Big Pipe project for the Inner East Side, and I'm proud to say we just planted 38 trees in the industrial area in the Inner East Side. They're really beautiful and big, and if you want to see a great neighborhood that's just gotten 11 mature large trees, green building supplies, we just planted entirely around their building. So it's a great example of the benefits that we're getting from that. Anyway, thank you very much. That's all I have to say today, and I encourage you to come out and plant with us in the future. Thank you.
Thanks, folks. Friends of Trees is a great program, and we really appreciate what you folks do for our neighborhoods.
Thanks, Mayor. Thanks.
Thank you for those six trees in my yard.
Any other testimony?
That's all who signed up.
Move to accept the report.
Second. Please call the vote.
Leonard?
Thank you for all your good work, but I want to make a special thanks to Ed Washington, who has been a friend of my family for over 50 years. It's great to... I won't say how much over 50 years, but just... thank you very much. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, this is all great work, and I want to thank the commission members, particularly Ed, for his long tenure, but we have a great commission, and they're working well, and Friends of Trees is a great supplementary or auxiliary organization that's really putting trees in the ground, literally. I think that one thing that gets me so interested in heritage trees and in the forest canopy is just walking around the city and realizing, and also, I guess, in better enforcement and preserving trees, is just walking around the city. You can go into any neighborhoods and find just these show-stopping trees. And yeah, if you just spend a second looking at them, some of them are just incredible. And it just thinks to me, it sometimes pains me to think that we have no ability to control their destiny, that a private landowner can take this tree down on a whim. So I think somewhere woven into all this is my concern that, you know, we establish more of the notion that, you know, the trees have rights too. Trees have rights. And that's what we're looking at in terms of some of the enforcement policies that we're going to be working on. and the continued designation of more heritage trees for their protections where we have willing property owners. But I do think we have to even look where we don't have willing property owners and start looking at how do we, those gems that are there that have probably lived hundreds of years before a house was built next to it, how do we protect, what kind of protection do we provide those gems, those things, that those trees that have been here long before us. So that will be something I'll continue to work on with the commission in the months ahead. And it will certainly not be without controversy, but I know this group's up to tackle that, and so am I. So thank you again for your work. Aye.
Potter.
I, too, want to thank the commission for your great work. You know, when we tout Portland as a very sustainable city, I think it starts what's in our ground with our trees, because they certainly help make our environment much better. And it's really a way to beautify a city that doesn't require a lot of expense. And so I really appreciate the work you do. And, Ed, congratulations on your time as the chair. You're a true community citizen of Portland, and we appreciate that. So good luck to you in the future. I look forward to working with you in my 8 months and 6 days. Hi.
The Heritage Tree is the first reading, so we'll actually vote on that next week. But I assure you the votes are there.
Okay, please read the 10 a.m. time, sir.
Item 479, accept the Interbureau Task Force report.
Please come on up, folks. You know, the Interbureau Task Force is an excellent example of government working across bureau and jurisdictional boundaries to resolve crime and livability issues in the entire community. I want to recognize Tanya Dickens and Officer Ocasio for their work in the great program, and by reaching out to youth, how you actually provide a vital service to our community. Also want to thank Commissioner Leonard for his support and leadership in this area. It's really important, and he's always stepped up to the plate, and I appreciate that. So with that, we'll turn it over to the committee for your report.
I'm Stephanie Reynolds. I am the manager of the Crime Prevention Program with the Office of Neighborhood Involvement and one of the co-chairs of the Interbureau Task Force.
I'm Jeremy Van Curen. I am public advocate for Mayor Potter's office and also a co-chair of the Interbureau Task Force.
And we are here today to present the second annual IBTF report. The task force was convened by City Council in December of 2005 to work in neighborhood areas subject to long-term and complex crime and livability issues, problems that had resisted usual problem-solving approaches. The report that we present today reflects the work that we and the IBTF committee have done over the past 2 years in two project areas, neighborhoods in the vicinity of Northeast Failing and Garfield and Northeast Cully and Killingsworth. In January, the committee added a third project area in the neighborhood of Northeast Sandy and 122nd. Today, we will briefly mention all three and answer any questions the council may have about the report we have submitted.
One of IBTF's goals is to translate lessons learned during IBTF's problem-solving efforts into larger actions that the city might take to the policy level. For example, through our collaboration in the Failing Garfield area, IBTF worked with the city attorney's office and the police bureau to resurrect the city's chronic nuisance process, and has been very successful dealing with long-established owner-occupied drug houses. As a result, last spring, the city attorney's office filed the first chronic nuisance case in court in over 10 years, which resulted in the boarding up of a drug property that was a neighborhood nuisance for more than 20 years. At this moment, the city is considering filing against two more owner-occupied drug houses, both of them in the Failing Garfield area, and both of them also blights on the neighborhood for over 20 years. Thanks to collaboration with the police and the attorney's office, we now have a viable strategy to remove these problems everywhere in the city, and drug dealers are taking notice.
In the Cully-Killingsworth area, our largest and most complex project area, we noted that single property owners were contributing to the collective misery of the whole neighborhood by not maintaining their properties to housing code standards. BDS was proactive in citing them, but these property owners, who often owned multiple properties, ignored citations that were not substantial enough to make a difference. IBTF learned BDS was working on amendments to Title 29 to add tougher penalties for these chronic offenders and supported BDS's innovations, which council passed last month.
Because of the many industrial businesses inside and near Cully, we have also observed a problem in the neighborhood, which is a significant problem citywide and statewide, and that is metal theft. To begin to address metal theft, IBTF asked our state delegation to strongly support House Bill 3026 in last year's legislative session, which, as of January this year, requires metal recyclers to use security cameras and to take identification information from sellers. Since metal theft is still clearly a problem, IBTF has asked the Revenue Bureau and the Police Bureau to work with metal recyclers to put the RAPID system online at their recycling yards, which will get them to take a thumbprint of sellers and record it onto a database that police can access. Finally, we understand that stronger measures to curb metal theft may be proposed again at the state level. If that happens, we will again ask our state delegation to support those laws.
Riding through neighborhoods such as Northeast Sandy and 122nd demonstrates a strong need for a SEPTED policy in the city. SEPTED stands for Crime Prevention Through Environmental Design. SEPTED includes landscape, lighting, and construction strategies that reduce opportunities to commit crimes. For example, increasing street lighting, designing defensible spaces, and eliminating hiding spots in architecture and landscape are all part of SEPTED. Through SEPTED improvements that cost little, though SEPTED improvements cost little to nothing to implement in building design, Portland does not have a policy requiring building plans to undergo a SEPTED review. This is an idea IBTF referred to the mayor's office, which has recently hired a consultant to work on a policy that would offer builders incentives and possibly requirements to account for SEPTED in their building plans. We're hoping that recommendations will be made to City Council this fall.
The city budget proposed yesterday also has a number of packages that we feel will be very helpful in resolving issues that we've observed in the project areas, as well as the city as a whole. The most important issue that we want to emphasize in our report is the overwhelming need for stable, ongoing programs to engage youth who are who are vulnerable to gangs. Gang recruitment is high in Cully, as well as in the Sandy and 122nd project area. The kids in the neighborhood often do not have other activities to engage them or interest them, so these kids are particularly at risk. To help address the problem, IBTF contracted with a service provider called Brothers and Sisters Keepers to reach out to Latina youth in Cully Killingsworth. You'll be hearing from them in just a moment. I also wanted to mention that Assistant Chief Lene Berg on our committee worked with Northeast Precinct to get the national GREAT program out there. GREAT stands for Gang Resistance and Education, and it's a prevention program aimed at school kids of all ages. Portland's program is now the first Spanish language GREAT program in the country, and the police are filling the classes as fast as they can schedule them. Parental interest in GREAT will also probably result in a neighborhood watch, and I'm not sure that there's ever been a neighborhood watch in that part of town. So the interest is high and the participation is encouraging, but IBTF's budget does not cover anywhere near the need in Cully and elsewhere, so we are hoping that you'll support budget packages for youth programming through Parks and Recreation, the Police Activities League, Schools Family Housing, and the Office of Youth Violence Prevention. So now I want to turn the presentation over to Brothers and Sisters Keepers for just a moment, and also the GREAT program, so you can hear from them about some of the youth programming initiatives that are taking place. So, Tanya Dickens.
Good morning.
Good morning. I have with me Kayla Law, and she's going to speak briefly, but really quick, I just want to say thank you for the support and dedication and believing in us to even have a small grant to do something in the Cully neighborhood with our Latina females. We started off with a very small numbers, especially during the time that we received the grant. It was during the Del Monte scare, and it was a lot of families that were really closed in and did not want to participate in a lot of different things, but because of the young people, the few young people we did have and the few parents we had, because of them, the collaboration, it wasn't just us doing it. It was everyone playing a part in it. And so everyone with the parents along with the other young people that we were working with were able to reach out to that neighborhood and really pull some young people in. And we began a group, and we hired Latino-speaking female. One of the parents were volunteering their time. We didn't have money to really pay anyone, but it was really the coming together of the community at that time and believing in us enough to support the program. And it was a very important piece. We went through, it was you know, that 6 months, it was a good thing. But the best thing right now is that we still have those young people that we work with. Even though the dollars are gone away, there's no way we can say, okay, we're done with you. So, of course, they participated with us during the spring break activities that we did, sponsored through Multnomah County, working together. So we had over 357 young people participate, even though we were only supposed to have 130. We were definitely overwhelmed, but it was going out to the Cully neighborhoods and having our flyers in Spanish and English. And the kids helped us write the flyers and translate them. And it was really a good experience. And it was kind of overwhelming when we had that many kids expecting 130. We get 357 from all nationalities. But it was a really good experience. And, you know, we want to thank, again, the council for believing in us enough to give us that, and hopefully that we'll be able to continue doing the work that we do in the community and the groups and the outreach, especially when it comes to gang prevention in our community. But, Ms. Kayla.
Brothers and Sisters Keepers is a good program for me because I'm a foster child, and I recently went back with my mom in August of 2007, but that didn't work out at all. And I thank God for Brothers and Sisters Keepers because if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be where I'm at right now, back with my foster mom. I'm in a more stable home, and without their support, I wouldn't be where I'm at. And it's also good for other teens because during spring break and summer vacation, they take out the time, and they take us to different activities like skating, swimming, bowling, stuff like that, and I think we should keep it going because it will help more teens and keep them out of the street. And another thing that we do, we have groups on Thursdays and Wednesdays with females, and we talk about different things like gangs, prostitution, living at home and stuff like that. And it's a good place to go because you can have someone you want to talk to because you can't just talk to any adult, but Brothers and Sisters Keeper, you can. So I think we should keep it going.
Thank you very much. What was your name again?
My name is Kayla Law.
Kayla?
Mm-hmm.
You did very well, Kayla.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nervous.
Thank you, Tanya.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Angel Ocasio. I'm teaching the GREAT program over at the Ortiz Center. This is Odelia Garcia. She's Family Services. And it's a six-week program, and it helps families basically strengthen and get together. I have a participant in a program with me, Melissa Torres. Go ahead.
I'm very happy to be here. Like you say, I'm working with Multnomah County, like addiction therapist. And I had been working there for more than 2 years in the Cully neighborhood. And it's really excited because I was doing, like, in the beginning, putting the puzzle pieces together and how will we engage the whole family. And it's really hard, but with this program now, about GROY program, finally, after 2 years, it's amazing because we was doing there, like, males group or youth groups or individual therapy, but one of my goals was to have the whole family component because we struggle in a lot with how to work with child is pretty much because we don't want just to provide like child care, but how really do prevention with the kids too. So I highly believe in how in a very hard work, the best thing to do is to do like a teamwork. So it has been incredible, great to be in a team with the police because the community has been taking a lot of confidence. And I'm very pleased in partnership with the Multnomah County with the police department about how the families feel a lot more integrating, and the fear they have for a lot of situations has been happening there. they feel a lot more comfortable, and they trust in the police, and they feel like they really can receive a help from the police, and it's a different experience than have the police just to arrest them than just to do prevention with them. So it has been amazing. I mean, I can be talking here for hours because it's really excited program, and we are going to have our graduation of 6 weeks. So we will be invite them to talk more about it. So it's a curriculum we are done our 6 weeks on this Saturday. So it's